Hello and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I'm your host for today, Simon Hodgkins, and it's my pleasure and delight to be joined by Olga Van Grol Lawler. Olga is with Boston Scientific, very involved in global regulatory intelligence and advocacy and everything in between. But rather than me introduce Olga, I'm going to hand it straight over to you if I can. Maybe just give our audience around the world a little bit of insight into your journey, what you're involved in, and maybe some of the key aspects that are on your agenda.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much, Simon. It's an absolute pleasure to be here today and to be asked. So my journey, I guess I'm well over a decade in the medical device field. At this point, my journey started working for Medtronic. They are currently actually the largest manufacturer of medical devices globally. So when I started for Medtronic, I started supporting the Middle East and Africa. And that was really at a time when the regulators in that region were launching their new regulatory frameworks. And I really loved, you know, kind of being the point person and communicating these new and changing requirements to our various businesses and, you know, making sure that the information was actionable and that we could align our regulatory strategies with our business goals. And then I guess kind of slowly, the region I was responsible for started to expand. So I got Middle East and Africa, then I got Central Asia and Turkey. And also I led their sub-Saharan African expansion. And I really loved analyzing and interpreting, you know, those new market requirements and information and helping the businesses also to realize, you know, the cost and the time involved in accessing these new markets, what resources they might need to meet their business goals. So it was a really interesting time. There was a lot going on, especially in that region, you know, kind of up and coming. But I eventually left Medtronic for an offer I couldn't refuse at Boston Scientific. And that was kind of to be highly involved in their EU MDR, so the new medical device regulation project. So I was involved in the core team for Boston Scientific on that. I worked in also in various of their work streams. So things like UDMED and UDI, you know, transitioning devices over to MDR, all the training, the communication, you know, kind of all of this stuff. But it also afforded me the opportunity to really look at what we were doing from the advocacy perspective. And so we had all of these people working in these various groups and the trade associations, but nobody was kind of pulling all that information together, right? So I set up a forum where if you were involved in one of the working groups of the trade association, you had to come back and report in on a monthly basis on what was going on, you know, what were we looking at, what draft positions could we see, were you getting the right input from the various Boston stakeholders, were, you know, the people involved in our project, you know, our MDR project, you know, did they understand what was going on, you know, and how it was relevant to their work streams and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I also helped support, you know, our new processes being developed, being in the EU, things like the EU authorized rep and how we were building out our procedures to do with that and person responsible for regulatory compliance and kind of all of that in between. And then, you know, the region wasn't just EU, it was EMEA. So I got to kind of hold on to that, you know, all that knowledge, I guess I had built up at Medtronic working, you know, with the Middle East and Africa and that kind of the wider region to also continue to help support looking at the new and changing regulatory requirements in the wider region. So I did that for, gosh, I guess 5-6 years. And, you know, especially with the advocacy part, that was really what I loved the most. And there was a new advocacy team at a kind of a corporate global level in Boston was formed. You know, it made sense that I would work very closely with that team and we collaborated a lot. And eventually, you know, it kind of naturally led to this new position at the corporate level. So now I'm the senior manager for global regulatory intelligence and advocacy at Boston Scientific. And I absolutely love the role. You know, my team is responsible for a lot of things. We pull together a lot of the new and changing requirements for our kind of our regulatory review within our quality system. Of course, you know, with the input from the regions themselves and the folks in the country, right? You can't do everything. We have an extended network that we rely on, but also communicating the changes out. We have a bi-weekly newsletter. So we do a lot of things, you know, helping to interpret the impact and, you know, I guess really kind of making sure that you're providing, you know, information in a way that's digestible and understandable and relevant, right? Relevant to our company and to our stakeholders. So that's kind of where I am now. And of course, even though my role is global, the EU and that kind of region is still my focus, especially, you know, with everything that's going on.
Well, thank you, Olga. You've done an excellent job at compressing years and years and years of experience into a very short introduction, but it does give people listening and watching to us talking here today a bit of context. And of course, Medtronic, well known to many in the industry, and Boston Scientific is known the world over. And you touched on, you said a phrase there, the impact of regulations. And I wanted to talk to you about that because in your capacity as this sort of senior global regulatory intelligence and advocacy manager at Boston Scientific, you see firsthand the impact of regulations. You see the good, the bad, and the ugly, maybe if I can phrase it that way. And of course, you're working to make positive changes, not just for Boston Scientific, but I think for the industry as a whole. So can I ask you about the role of sort of that regulatory affairs role within medical devices in particular, and of course your view on the impact of regulations, because it is a hot topic?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think regulatory affairs really is a critical function. It's, in my opinion, the only kind of end-to-end function, right, where we look at the entire life cycle of the medical device. So regulatory leads that kind of like even the, you know, from the pre-market strategy to facilitating the market access, which varies in every geography, what the requirements are for that. Also to ensuring the post-market compliance, you know, with the regulatory requirements. We do audit support. And, you know, I suppose the primary role is, you know, that kind of safeguarding of patient safety. But not only that, I kind of touched on it earlier. We're also a strategic partner for the business, right? And I think sometimes people forget that. You know, we really help them to understand the potential regulatory barriers, you know, to market entry, how long market access will take, how much will it cost, but also to help them, you know, really align their regulatory strategies with the business goals. And I'd liken the current climate to kind of like, you know, it's, I've heard people say it's the perfect storm, and I could not agree more. So in Europe, we have these new, you know, we have the medical device regulation, the MDR, we have the in vitro diagnostic regulation, the IVDR, they're currently being rolled out in Europe. But it's not just Europe. We have countless other requirements globally, from the Eurasian Union to Australia, right? I mean, it's a big world. So not only do regulatory have to keep pace with all of these new and changing requirements, but we also, you know, ensure that that information is being communicated to the right stakeholders within our companies at the right time in a way that's understandable, digestible, you know, informative. You know, so it's really important not just to understand the impact, but, you know, more specifically, the impact to your company. What's, you know, the interpretation within your systems to, you know, how you look at these things, how they impact your processes and things like that. And it's also really important to help filter out the noise, because everybody has limited resources. You know, it's a big world, and it's not like we have this unlimited resources. So it's really about, you know, kind of focusing your regulatory resources in a strategic manner that can really benefit your company.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think a couple of things that sprang to mind as you were talking there, Olga, was that, number one, it is a good idea to remind people that it's actually there to help the business, to drive the business forward, to share that critical information, because to some degree, the rules can be quite onerous. They can require a lot of lobbying and discussion to make changes, to sort of if I could use the term, maybe level the playing field a little bit in certain areas, because it's not one size fits all. It's not one rule across various geographies across the world. And in certain areas, there are certain impacts, aren't there? And it brings me on nicely to something else I wanted to ask you, which is particularly around the European medical device area, because there are some impacts there, aren't there? And maybe you could maybe shed a little bit of light there in terms of your view on what's happening in Europe right now.
Yeah. I guess that, you know, to kind of set the scene a little bit, you know, when we look at the aim of the new regulations in Europe, I think that there's something that absolutely everybody can align with. You know, it's things like, you know, the regulation has, you know, a robust, transparent, predictable, sustainable regulatory framework, you know, one that also ensures a high level of patient safety, but also while supporting innovation. And when you read the text of the MDR, it even points out to things like, which I think is amazing, that, you know, small and medium-sized enterprises make up a large portion of the industry, right? So it's not just, you know, the Medtronics, the Bostons of the world. You know, the vast majority of companies in this space are small and medium-sized actors. And, you know, when you roll out new legislation, it's very important to keep that in mind as well. And also, I'd say, you know, kind of historically, Europe has been seen as, you know, kind of the global standard, right, in high quality healthcare. Our patients here in Europe historically have had first in line access to the latest innovations, with the majority of companies, you know, using Europe as that springboard, as their kind of their first launch, their go-to market. And unfortunately, we're seeing things, you know, an impact, let's say, to the regulations, which are less than adequate. So we did a survey via MedTech Europe. We collected the data, I think, between March and April last year, but it was published last July, and it really kind of showed that our house is on fire. I vividly remember this slide from MedTech Europe, and it literally had a burning house on it. And so we used to present this slide, you know, externally, you know, to the commission and the MDC and all the rest. But when we had the data, it was incredibly obvious that there was an urgent need to prevent critical shortages of medical device. Like, we were facing into a clinical healthcare crisis if something was not done, you know? So to give some kind of more, you know, perspective, like, under the old system, under the directives, there were about 90 notified bodies designated to that legislation. Now, only 57 of them actually applied to be designated under the new requirements. And then when we published our data last year, only 33 of them were actually designated, right, at that time last year. And it's up to 39 now. So we're seeing the needle go up, but I mean, it's still only 39, right? And then as a consequence of that, of course, I mean, when you look at the number of devices on the European market, there's over 500,000 types of medical technologies on the European market. And they range from plasters that you would put on a scraped knee to pacemakers, right? That's the range of devices we're looking at. And so only 85%, or sorry, 15%, so 85% of that 500,000 devices were yet to be certified to the new requirements, you know, and that was in the middle of the year last year. And then also, you know, time to certification, right, had doubled from the old system. So on average, it was taking 13 to 18 months. So obviously, you know, this is pointing to major capacity issues in the new system due to multiple factors. I would say that everybody wants to move the devices to MDR, to the new requirements, because while there's an allowance to keep placing the existing devices, the devices certified under the old regime, and there's nothing wrong with them, they're perfectly good medical devices, the ones we use every day, until you've moved them to the new regime, to the MDR, you can't make any significant changes to your devices, right? And so what we're seeing then as well is that nearly half of the medtech companies are putting, you know, their innovative products or projects on hold. And innovation is really critical to our industry from a patient perspective, but also, you know, to respond to calls from the EU and just society in general, right? For more environmentally sustainable healthcare. And it's with those innovations that you start to see these types of things. You know, it's innovation that benefits digital healthcare, and that in turn then empowers patients and support care teams. You know, and we have a chronically overburdened health system as it is. So, you know, we were looking at all these kind of growing indications that the new and existing products are going to struggle to reach European patients in time. You know, when we look at IVDs, we don't personally have any in Boston, but, you know, 17% of the in vitro diagnostics, you know, are expected to be discontinued. And the decisions were primarily based on the expectation that the costs of the transition would outweigh, you know, product revenue, especially among those small and medium-sized enterprises that we're talking about. And we're seeing, you know, in large scale that, you know, 50% of medical device manufacturers are deprioritizing the EU or plan to do so as that geography of first choice, you know, where I mentioned that, you know, EU is a springboard where they would launch products, and that is not happening anymore. And we're already seeing physicians, you know, European clinicians say that they don't have the same access to devices. I think there's an example where in cardiac care, the legacy products show shortages, and it's not only impacting, you know, children and patients with rare diseases. We hear that a lot in the media, which is very frightening, but it's also all devices in this space, right? A survey of the European clinicians said that 49% of them were already seeing, you know, issues in availability with devices. And then just in regards to competitiveness as the EU as a whole, right? I think back in 2015, the European medtech sector made up 31% of the global market, right? And let's say the US was about 40%. Now we're seeing that the European market is shrinking. Now it's about 27%, and the US is increasing. It's, you know, 43.5% or something like this. And these developments are coming at a time when we're already facing really complex challenges. We're seeing a big gap, you know, between the demand for care, you know, as patients get older and all of those, you know, or populations get older and all of those other issues. But also, just delivery of healthcare, you know, the services impacting citizens, and it's patients that will pay the price for that. And the COVID pandemic in particular showed us the importance of building resilient, globally convergent and integrated health systems, you know, and that it was so important for regulators and governments to act decisively and to invest in innovation, you know, that would help us prevent and prepare for crises in the future. And this is kind of, to my mind, it's like we want to prevent these crises, but we've nearly created our own one at the moment with the current structure the way it is. I think we have some things we need to work on for sure.
yeah I think that's a good way of putting it, Olga. And it's interesting because it comes back to what we were talking about earlier about leveling the playing field a little bit. You know, it isn't this one size fits all. There is a lot of frustration too, because you mentioned there, and actually I was talking to Ema Sherry, who, for people listening or watching us talking here today, Ema is involved with IBEC, with the Irish MedTech Association. And she also touched on the point that you've just made about it is a shame that a lot of this innovation and these sort of technological breakthroughs are being sort of held back, aren't they? Which, of course, has the opposite effect. It has a knock-on. It doesn't help us roll out digital health. It doesn't help the end user, the patient care that we're all keen to provide. Mm-hmm. And I was also talking to Martin Curley, who I'm sure you probably know as well, professor of innovation at Maynooth University and, you know, a digital health leader in his own right, previously with the health service executive, the HSE in Ireland. And, you know, the amount of innovation that the companies that are involved in this sector can bring to the table is phenomenal. It's outstanding. Yeah. It can really revolutionize patient care and healthcare, not just in Ireland, but globally. And I think the regulatory challenges are obviously something that you're heavily involved in. From your perspective, though, What can we do about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a lot we can do, and it's really important for people to be involved. You know, like the survey results that I was talking to there, that, you know, MedTech Europe had last July, they were, of course, you know, presented to the European Commission, to the Medical Device Coordination Group, and to all the other stakeholders, with the aim to kind of elevate MDR and get it onto the agenda of the EPSCO meeting, which is kind of the meeting of the health ministers within the EU, within each member state. And so one of the things you have to understand about Europe is that it's quite unique, and it's a challenging environment to move the needle in certain respects, because you don't just have to convince the European Commission, who's writing the legislation. You also have to, you know, convince the Council. And for medical technologies, that would be, you know, the health ministers, you know, and each member state has their representative. But again, it's Europe, so it's not only that. You also have the Parliament, and the Parliament has all of the members of the European Parliament that represent the European people. So you have these three institutions and this co-decision process. So it's not as simple as saying, hey, European Commission, this isn't working. Can you please change it? If there isn't political buy-in, it's really just not going to go anywhere. So it's really important not just to work at a European level, but also to work, you know, at a member state level. And I would say, you mentioned EMIR earlier, and EMIR, you know, of course, works for the Irish MedTech Association, you know, via IBEC. And IBEC are actually the third largest lobbying group in the EU, which I was fascinated to understand. But so because I'm Irish, so I work through MedTech Europe, but I also work by the Irish MedTech Association. And it's important to get our views both to the Irish regulators so that they can understand the challenges, and also to the government ministers. And the Irish MedTech Association did a fantastic job. You know, they set up kind of face-to-face briefings last year where we met with ministers, TDs. We met with 41 TDs, 10 senators, 5 government ministers, a leader of a party. There was really strong engagement in Ireland, you know, because they have a fairly large medtech sector, I suppose, as well. And then the Irish Minister of State, who's responsible for public health and is managing the Irish government response to MDR, was also highly engaged. But it's not just talking at that member state level, because, of course, everything's connected, right? So, you know, we have asked them, can you raise parliamentary questions? Can you elevate this at a national level? But not only that, can you talk to your party colleagues or other colleagues more widely, who are then our MEPs in Europe, right, and raise the issues with them? But it wasn't just, you know, then it's also, okay, getting the Irish contingent to Brussels. Okay, let's go and meet, you know, with the Irish health attaché. Let's go and meet with Irish MEPs who are interested. You know, let's really get the Irish voice and our point of view, you know, on the radar here. And, you know, in fairness to IBEC, they did an amazing job, but it really did help to move the needle, because they were listening, both, you know, the Health Products Regulatory Agency, the Irish regulator, but also the ministry. And it was the Irish minister at both the June EPSCO and the December EPSCO that kind of let out the comments and let's say the member state response. And so stuff like that's really important. And if people don't get involved at a member state level, you know, they won't have that input from you. Because it's all well to hear things coming from Brussels, but it kind of nearly works the other way, from the ground up, right? To get that political, you know, kind of push to make things happen. So that was incredibly important. And what kind of came out of that advocacy were two things, right? So after the first meeting, they started looking at non-legislative solutions, which are very important, right? And they produced an MDCG document looking at things like, how can they reduce the administrative burden for the notified bodies, you know, and take out things that really aren't, let's say, necessary. And a lot of other things too, like, can you have, you know, upfront dialogue with your notified bodies, or structured dialogue, you know, this type of thing, which, you know, is so, so important. And while that's very much needed and it's still ongoing, we were facing a cliff edge, right? So this, you know, this really focused advocacy was so important to kind of say, yes, Thank you. This is needed. And they're doing a huge amount of work, and we really appreciate it, but it's not enough. So then we saw in March, after the December EBSCO meeting, that there was an amendment to the MDR, and it was allowing for more time to avoid that cliff edge, right? So we had a date originally that was 2024, and after that date, you couldn't place existing devices on the market unless they'd moved to MDR. And remember, 85% of them still had not moved or certified, right? So this is like no more devices in Europe. That's what we're looking at. That's serious. So it was allowing for more time out to 2027 or 2028, to allow for the transition, for the capacity issues at the notified body, and all of those types of things. But it's not just industry. It was so important to have buy-in from other stakeholders as well, because a little bit, I'd say to a certain extent, unfortunately, the voice of industry isn't always trusted, especially, with politicians and such. So we had stakeholders like the Biomedical Alliance in Europe, and they represent 36 medical research societies, and they were calling on member states to take action to prevent, this massive shortage of devices, as were patient associations and, heads of hospitals, clinicians, like all of these other groups were also starting to raise their voices saying, hey guys, we have a big issue. So, there was a lot done, let's say, in the last year, looking at, that's kind of historically what we've done, but I think it's only the beginning.
Yeah, thank you, Olga. And it isn't an easy topic. It's complex. There are lots of players, and I think it is encouraging though when you talk about we did see the needle starting to move. We have made efforts, but you're also saying, but it's not enough, and that there seems to be an awful lot of collaboration that's still required, and more voices I think need to be heard, don't they, to move this forward? Because you're talking about the regulatory or the legislative changes being pushed out to avoid that cliff edge, maybe to 27, 28. But in the world that you live in the world of global regulatory affairs and legislation, that's not really a long time away, is it? So what are the sort of the opportunities and the challenges that we should be focused on right now for that industry as a whole?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. So, and the question's incredibly timing. There's a huge amount going on in the background, so I'm really happy to share it. So, we're kind of like we're 6 years in already, right? So, like 2017, was the entry into force of the medical device regulation. So we're 6 years down the track, and the goals still haven't been fully achieved. And while we're seeing the needle move, and you talked about the non-legislative changes and the additional time, and they were very much needed. And again, we really appreciate them and the work that the Commission's doing and all of the other stakeholders. But it's really apparent at this point that there's fundamental structural issues with the new regulatory framework. It's unpredictable, it's complex, it's slow, it's costly. And it's resulting, in medical technologies already on the market, maybe not continuing on the market, or that we're struggling to see these future innovations and technologies get there. So kind of with that in mind, industry actually just last week on September 14th, MedTech Europe sent a message, or sorry, sent a letter to the European Health Commissioner, Stella Kyriakides. And it really presents that comprehensive case for structural reform of the regulations to address the healthcare access challenges that we've been discussing, resulting from the current framework. And so it's kind of, there's three main pillars. It's that we need a more efficient and fit for purpose CE marking system. As I said, the current system is just unpredictable. And predictability is such a huge part of this, right? You can't plan if you don't have predictability, and nobody knows what the costs are going to be because, it could be an hourly rate. How many hours is it going to take? A long time, 13 to 18 months of hours. So we have all of these challenges. And then, kind of secondly, the current system, it does not support innovation, right? For medical devices or diagnostic. There's a lack of these kind of specific accelerated pathways that we see in other jurisdictions, either for devices that maybe are for rare diseases, are for pediatrics, or just are breakthrough technologies and we haven't seen them before. Currently, it's just kind of one size fits all framework, you know, based on risk pass, but it's not doing what it needs to. And you know, the aim being to get these safe, high quality devices to European patients so that they can benefit from these innovations. And then, you know, kind of the other thing that the letter is asking for, which we really feel strongly in, is that to put all of this kind of into practice, Europe needs a single, dedicated, accountable structure, like a governance structure, to oversee and manage this regulatory system, because at the moment it's very disparate, right? It's like the national competent authorities are in charge of certain aspects and they can have varying views, and it, you know, we're seeing these discrepancies at, you know, at a member state level. And so the ask really to the commissioner, and this ask is coming not just from MedTech Europe, but 30 other trade associations signed the letter, and that's representing all of the EU member states, so including the EEA, the European Economic Area, and Switzerland as well. And the ask is really to formally elevate this need for comprehensive structural reform within Europe's health policy debates, you know, including with the heads of the medicines agencies, with the Medical Device Coordination Group, and, you know, all of the other stakeholders, and also to request a meeting directly with the commissioner herself. So it's so important. But I wanted to stress as well, or just, you know, to indicate that the commissioner, you know, after the EBSCO meetings, they did say, they did acknowledge, right, that there are these kind of structural issues. And so they have this study on governance and innovation at the moment, and it's really to identify, you know, the benefits and challenges of the current governance structure. So hopefully our advocacy will feed into this as well, right? But also, you know, the impacts on innovation, you know, and so with a view to really kind of informing possible adaptations, you know, in the future, but in the short term, in the medium term, in the long term. And one thing that we were so excited, or, you know, kind of happy to see, was that there was, the objectives were updated and a second one was added, and it was that the results of this study that the commission are now doing would then contribute to the commission's evaluation of the MDR and the IVDR. And so the commission actually has a legal obligation, I'll just use the MDR as the example, I think it's under Article 121 of the MDR, to evaluate it by May 2027 at the latest. So all of this work that the commission is now doing is going to lead into that, and hopefully, you know, kind of lead to a course correction, if you want, so that we can start to fix some of these structural issues. But also, which I think is interesting and timely, the MDR has an aim to promote global convergence, right? That, you know, our regulations contribute to a high level of, you know, safety and protection for patients worldwide, and also access to devices, right? And as it happens, the European Commission is currently the chair of the International Medical Device Regulators Forum. That's the IMDRF. And so in Brussels in March, the Global Medical Technologies Alliance, GMTA, actually presented a white paper. And MedTech Europe is part of GMTA because it's this global group, right, representing industry. And they talked about, you know, the importance of having convergent regulatory frameworks based on international best practices and standards, right? That, you know, the importance of recognition and reliance of accepting global clinical trial data and leveraging things like real world evidence, you know, to look at things like electronic instructions for use and digital labeling. And they're so important, you know, not just for access to devices, but again, when we look at other legislation in Europe, like the EU Green Deal, you've got some devices like going out with, you know, books this wide, like for capital equipment, where that could be provided digitally, you know, and help with all of those other goals that we have, you know. So it's, you know, really important to encourage this kind of convergent regulatory model. And the European Commission is chairing the IMDRF, as I said, at the moment, and the MDR has those goals. So that's really an opportunity that I think is so important. And it's just important that our European system works too, right? Because, as I said earlier, the CE mark has always been a gold standard, right? And there's over 60 geographies globally that leverage in some way the CE mark. So The funny thing, and it's not funny at all, the thing is, right, that this cliff edge we're facing in Europe, it isn't just impacting Europe, it's also impacting other markets. And actually, the Commission are presenting at the IMDRF on the amendment to these other geographies so that they can, kind of understand that yes, the devices can stay on the market out to 2027, 2028, so long as they meet certain criteria, and these are the tools that you can use. So there's a lot going on. I think there's a huge amount of opportunity at the moment, and I'm really optimistic about it, but at the same time, I'm not naive. Sometimes it's kind of like, pushing a rock up a hill or walking through mud. Like, we can do it, but we all need to work together. We need to have everyone's voices at the table, because it's very well having technocrats write legislation, but if they've never worked in industry, sometimes they don't understand, the implications in the real world. So it's important to have clinicians at the table, to have industry at the table, to have the regulators, to have the voice of patients, to have everybody there to make sure that we get a framework that works for everybody.
Yeah, I think you've summed that up beautifully, Olga, because at one level, everybody wants safe medical support, devices, innovation for patients. But on the other hand, it's not easy getting some of these things to the table. And, that cliff edge has come up again. And there is some great work going on. I don't want to downplay the great work that's going on by you and others in
100%.
the industry. And the voice is growing, but there's still a lot of work to do here, I think, is where we're at.
Oh, listen, Simon, definitely. It'd be naive to think we're even nearly there. There's a huge amount that needs to be done. Huge amount.
100%. Well, look, let's leave it on an optimistic note. The future of the industry, Olga, let's talk a bit about that, because you're better placed than anybody to think about the hopes and the views and maybe to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing, to li look a little bit down the road. What are you hoping for? What are you seeing? What does the future of the industry hold for us?
I mean, I guess I've just talked about the importance of, a globally convergent system. So I'm not that for me, that's so important, but I won't talk about that again. I really think that, digital health is for sure the future. It empowers patients, it supports healthcare professionals, it improves health systems. It does so much, and it's so broad. Like, it's hard just honestly, like, trying to wrap your head around all of it. It's everything from connected medical devices, like wearables, like I've got on my wrist right now, wireless devices, personalized healthcare, precision medicine, remote patient monitoring, telehealth, electronic health records, at the hospitals themselves, and that kind of whole connected care management, all of that kind of stuff. And the list goes on. I mean, it's just huge. But from I always try and bring some, back to a regulatory perspective. So I'd say, kind of from a regulatory perspective, behind all of these fantastic innovations, of course, we have a huge amount of huge legislation that we now need to look at. So, we've talked, kind of in the European perspective a lot. So I'll keep it there. But like in Europe alone, we have the AI Act, the Artificial Intelligence Act now coming, and that will determine how, and even if, right, newly enabled AI medical technologies are put on the market. We have the Data Act that looks at the rules of the use and access of the data generated, all across Europe. And that's in every sector. So these aren't sector-specific legislations. It's like horizontal legislation across all sectors. Then, okay, for health, we have the European Health Data Space. And that has so much potential, to unleash, all of that data, in the health space, to make healthcare systems really, more sustainable and resilient, and to feed into, things like real world evidence, and are devices really safe, and to, be able to do things, quicker, to innovate, to make sure patients are getting those devices. And then, of course, because you have all of these AI enabled technologies, you have things on digital, you have the Cyber Resilience Act, which gives, of course, the rules for products with digital elements, to make them more secure. So there's so much potential here. I really think the future is there, but you know, there's a huge amount for companies to be looking at in this space. And then that's you know, kind of from a product perspective or from an external environment perspective, but even, you know, from a reg perspective inside the companies, you know, we're looking at big data, you know, and we need to manage your big data for things like, you know, in Europe, you have EudaMed, the European database on medical devices. You know, where are you getting your data from? You know, all of that has to go in there. But it's also within, you know, within the reg function, like, how can we standardize our submission processes, maybe using artificial intelligence to reduce human error and make sure that, you know, you have the same things across all of your documentation? And you know, that kind of stuff will free up the regulatory professionals then to, you know, really add value in other areas, you know, reviewing the submission files, partnering, you know, with other functions, you know, looking at future needs and interpreting this huge volume of new requirements we have coming down the track, both, you know, in Europe and globally. So I think, yeah, for me, the future is digital. And although we're facing, you know, probably a lot of challenges with some of this legislation, I like to think that the future is bright.
Yeah, I think that's a great note as we come towards the end of our time together today. And I think, you know, areas like AI and digital health, just that alone is such a vast area.
Yes.
In the med devices industry and in the wider healthcare and life sciences industry. But is there anything else we haven't touched on today, Olga, that you'd like maybe to bring to our attention? And also, if people want to find out more about this or get more involved in the discussion, is there anywhere where you could point people to?
Yes. So I think it's incredibly important for people to get involved. I think it's especially important for those smaller and medium-sized industries to be involved and to get, you know, their voice. Because, you know, pointing back again to that MedTech Europe, you know, survey, I believe it was like up to 30% of these SMEs didn't have a notified body, or their notified body wasn't designated. So it's really hitting them hard. So it's incredibly important that they get involved. I would say, you know, in your member state trade association. So for example, in Ireland, of course, is the Irish MedTech Association. In France, it could be SNITM, you know, and so on and so forth. Get involved at that local level, especially if you don't have access to the, you know, the bigger trade associations. So make sure that your voice is heard and that you're providing input. Because one thing that I've really noticed, and I'm sure, you know, everybody would say is, it's, you know, it's one thing to say we have all these problems, but if you don't have the data to back it up, nobody is going to listen to you. And so, you know, it's so important that they bring their perspective, their voice, their data, what they're experiencing, so that we get the full picture.
Well, thank you so much indeed, Olga. I think we've certainly visited some of the opportunities and challenges in this area. It's been so good to touch on this topic. There's so much more we could talk about. Maybe we'll have to revisit it in the not too distant future and just check in and see how we're progressing as an industry. It brings us nicely to the end of the show today with Olga. Please make sure to tune in again to see and or listen to more Vista Talks, more discussions with interesting people and interesting topics from around the world. And all that's left for me to do is to say thank you so much indeed, Olga, for spending some time with us today and sharing your insights and wisdom with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much, Simon, for having me. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, thank you.